Blog Talk Radio.
This is Ty Lawson from Denver Nuggets number 3, and listen to FSP Crucial.
Yeah, it's Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, check. Fantasy Sports and Politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on. Peace.
Hello, hello, hello. Yes, it is. It's the last day of May, and this is the FSP Crew Show. Hello, you people out there. Welcome. My name is JT, and I'm joined by my co-host, Black Bookie, and we're looking for Jeff the Joker, but he's not around. But anyway, we'll keep the show going. As always, we engage in conversation, give you information about the world of fantasy sports and politics. We have a great show in store for you tonight. We have a special guest with us tonight to talk NBA and the NBA playoffs. Also, some NFL and some football-related news. The number to call is 347-637-3220. I'll say it again. It's 347-637-3220. We also have a chat room. Chat room is open. It's open forum. If you'd like to ask a question, make a statement, anything like that, just feel free. If you don't want to talk on the phone, you don't want to converse, chat room is open for you. But let's get the show rolling because I got the special guest I want to bring in, and we're excited to get him. I'm going to bring my first co-host. Talk to me, Black. How you doing, my man?
Hey, what's going on, man? What's going on? Feeling good. Feeling good.
Hold on, man. Let me just... okay, Black. As you know, we have a special guest. Last time he was on this show, he gave us a breakdown of his company, 94 Foot of Game. Today he comes back. He comes back big time as the head of player development for the L.A. Lakers. Welcome back, Phil Handy. How you doing, my man?
Oh, man, I'm good. It's good to be back on the show. I appreciate you guys bringing me back live.
Well, Phil, when I saw it, I didn't realize it until recently when Black had mentioned it to me, that you got hooked up with the Lakers and Mike Brown. Now, I know it probably took place late last year, if I'm not mistaken. Tell us the process and how it developed that you got hooked up with Mike Brown and the Lakers.
Well, to be honest, man, I think probably the process started maybe about 5 years ago. Randy Bennett is a good friend of mine. He's a head coach at St. Mary's College out in California. And I've done a lot of work with his players over the years and training those guys because it's close to my hometown. So Randy and Mike Brown have been friends going back for years. I think actually Randy Bennett might have coached Mike Brown in college. And so, you know, really the opportunity just came from the network of having an opportunity to work with Randy's players. He really liked the work I was doing with his guys and saw the results. And he had tried to put me in touch with Mike Brown when he was in Cleveland. Didn't work out. And then when Mike got the job here with the Lakers, the opportunity and the timing just seemed right for everything to fall in place.
And now you're with the Lakers. Tell me, what does the head of player development do for the Lakers?
Well, my day-to-day responsibilities are I'm responsible for keeping our guys in shape on the court, making sure their skills are still intact, you know, making sure they're getting up enough shots, making sure they're getting their reps in. So basically every day before and after practice, I'm responsible for working our guys out and trying to set up workouts for them and giving them avenues to continue to work out throughout the course of the season. Now, obviously, in the off season, you know, my job is built around me putting guys through workouts on a daily basis to help them improve in areas where they need to improve that we may not be able to tap on during the season. So, you know, we just got started a few days ago with some of our younger guys, getting them back in the gym and trying to help these guys improve on areas that they really need to improve upon, whether it be from ball handling to shooting to post work to pull-up jumpers, three-pointers, you know, whatever it has to do with the game, inside the lines of the game, that is pretty much my responsibility.
The Lakers have some big names, as you know, as you well know. What kind of interaction or advice or whatever do you give like Pau Gasol, Andrew Bynum, and you know I'm leaving the best for last, Kobe Bryant. So,
well, you know we'll start with Kobe. I mean, obviously Kobe's Kobe. So, you know, he's been doing this for 16 years, and you know his routine is one of, you know, he is a creature of habit. He has routines that he likes to do and likes to stick with. So for a guy like him, you know, my job would be to really just assist with what he wants to get done. You know, I'm not the type of guy that really tries to come in and try to change too much that somebody's done. I mean, Kobe's been successful at what he's done for years, so my job is to be an aid to what he wants to get done, and if there's some things that he wants to try to work on, then, you know, we can try to implement new things. But really with him, you know, I just try to learn what he likes to do and make myself available to work out with him and to keep him sharp in the manner that he sees most beneficial to him. You know, Powell and Andrew are a little different. You know, those guys are they're also, you know, Powell's obviously been around for a long time. You know, he's kind of set into his ways with his routines as well. But, you know, both Andrew and Powell were guys that I had a chance to work out with, you know, quite a bit this past season. And they were both open to, you know, improving on things that they need to improve on, you know, working on their low post game and trying to improve their ability to knock down open shots. So those two guys were a little different than Kobe in the sense that even with their routines, they still will try to expand and improve on other areas of the game that they think can be impactful for them during the season.
Now, like you said before, you have some seasoned veterans and some stars on the team, and you have some young guys. It sounds like the seasoned veterans, you get what they're looking to do, and sounds like that you pretty much dictate what the younger guys are going to do. Am I right in assuming that, or
you know, there's right, there is some right in that. The, like I said, Powell is, you know, like I said, you try to give these guys a workout plan, and with this past season, I mean, this past season is a little different than normal. You know, coming out of the lockout, you know, we played 66 games, and our schedule was pretty much to where we played every other day. I mean, that was pretty much the bulk of the season. Every other day we played a game. So with the guys that play heavy minutes during a season like this past one, it really is how their bodies feel. You know, if they're feeling like they want to get in extra work, then we can build some workouts for them. But for the most part, those guys barely had time to rest. You know, there may have been some days in between where they felt like they needed to come in and get some extra work, and if they wanted to do that, then we would build workouts for them. Now, in Kobe's case, Kobe has workouts that he's done for years, and he likes to continue to do. So you kind of assist with him and help him do his workouts. Other guys are more acceptable to doing workouts that you might put together for them to help them continue to stay sharp. So I think there's yes and no to your question. And obviously with the younger guys, you know, we evaluate them and try to put them in the best positions possible where they can improve in a way that fits around Coach Brown's system, obviously during the season. And in the off season, their workouts are a little different where you have a lot more latitude and room to really work to help these guys just improve their overall game.
How closely, you know, some of these guys, especially this short in the season and compacted season, some of these guys get nicked up and whatever, and that falls in line with the trainer. How closely do you work with the trainer with these guys?
We all work pretty close. I mean, everybody on this staff is we have to be a pretty good moving part. So, I mean, basically, man, we're all like a well-oiled machine. You know, no part can work without the other. So our training staff, we're all pretty linked together. The strength and conditioning coach, you know, we try to correlate what we do on the floor into what he does in the weight room and vice versa. The training staff, you know, Gary Vitti's been with the Lakers for close to 30 years.
Right,
so
right.
His expertise and knowledge, you know, what he sees from us, if he's seeing some things that are giving players problems or we're overworking them, obviously we all work together to make sure that our guys are getting the best benefit possible to where they can stay healthy on the court. So we all work very closely together.
Black?
All right, Phil. First of all, let me tell you, man, I'm so proud that you got this position. I like the way the story is heading. I like how it's ending. But tell me a little bit about the young guys that you work with there. Specifically, Devin Ebanks and I don't know if I'm going to say his name right. Andrew Goldlock or Goldlock?
Goldlock.
Right? Goldlock?
Andrew Goldlock.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I've spent a lot of time with all of our young guys. Devin Ebanks, you know, Andrew Goldlock, Darius Morris, and Christian Ianga came over in the trade from Cleveland. You know, those four guys are probably the bulk of our youth. Obviously, they're all different players, but those guys pretty much came in and worked out every day, whether it be before or after practice. You know, with those guys, Devin obviously was one who had a chance to play. Devin and Andrew Goldlock probably had the most opportunity to play throughout the course of the season. You know, so those guys, sometimes they work less than others, but you know, our young guys, you know, in developing those guys, it was important to make sure that they were on the court every day, you know, at least an hour before practice. And depending on what we need to get done, sometimes they would stay after and get extra shots up, but they did a good job this year of coming in and working hard before and after practice on a daily basis.
All right, and I noticed you guys had drafted the big Australian, Phil Mayock. Is he on a developmental league team, or is he still with the Lakers at all?
No, he. I'm not sure where he was this past season, but I believe if I heard correctly, I just found out that he will be joining us for the summer league this summer. So
okay.
That'll be my first opportunity to see this young kid. I don't know previously if he had spent any time with the Lakers. I know he wasn't here this whole season, so I'm not sure if he played in Europe or if he played back in his home country in Australia, but he will be with us this summer from what I hear.
Okay, yeah, a couple of guys, because our world-famous summer league was him. He played here last year.
Okay.
Pretty tall guy, long, wiry, blocked a lot of shots.
Well,
a little bit of offensive game, so you're going to have a job to do with him, especially if he's coming.
That's all right, man. That's all right. That's what we're here for.
So you saying these guys, they do some summer league plays also?
Yeah, our younger guys. So we'll have Darius Morris and Andrew Goldlock, Christian Ianga. I'm not sure if Devin Ebanks will play, but typically, you know, all the younger guys, any young guys that we do have on the roster, like whatever our draft pick is this year coming in, you know, all of those young guys will definitely play in the summer league in Vegas this summer.
Okay. Do they play in any other, besides those summer leagues, are they allowed to play in any other, like on the East Coast, like if they wanted to play in the Goodman or up in Northern California in that league?
Yeah,
they allowed to play in those or no?
Those guys are allowed to play in pretty much whatever they want, as long as there's no rules or regulations. You know, they're allowed to play wherever they want to play. And we try to, as much as possible, we try to make sure that we get to touch our guys as much as possible in the off season, just to make sure that they're continuing to work and continuing to get better. I mean, that is our first and foremost, that is our job as coaches and coaching staff. Just that these guys are under our wing and they're in our franchise and part of our family. We need to make sure that we can keep our hands on them and help them continue to improve. Now, some of these guys, you know, they'll play in the Drew League. They have a little Drew League here in Los Angeles, which is a a pretty good league. There's obviously the San Francisco and the Bay Area Pro-Am. And I know a lot of these guys do go back east. They like to play in Rucker Park and all these other places. So, it, you know, if these guys are gamers, man, they'll find a place where they can play as much as possible.
All right. Let's talk about what's taking place right now in the NBA, the NBA playoffs. You got the finals in the East and the finals in the West. Since you're on the West Coast, let's talk about the San Antonio Spurs and the Oklahoma City Thunder, the seasoned vets versus the young guns that are trying to unseat the well, let me put it this way. In my opinion, I think the San Antonio Spurs have been flying under the radar. The Oklahoma City Thunder were the popular players that were talked about in the media, along with the Los Angeles Lakers, quite naturally. Unfortunately, the Lakers got eliminated. Now it's Oklahoma. Now the San Antonio Spurs are on an unbelievable winning streak. What do you see in the future of the Oklahoma City Thunder starting tonight?
Well, man, to address, you know, your comment about the Spurs and flying under the radar, I think if you look at the way the game has changed, you know, Oklahoma has a lot of young guys, and they're very talented, mm-hmm. and they play with a lot of flash, and they bring a lot of excitement to the game, and as well as winning. San Antonio is just, I mean, they're blue collar. I think they're under the radar because they're not flashy, they're not playing above the rim,
right.
They don't bring so much quote-unquote excitement to the game, but they win. You know, so when you're dealing with a team of that caliber, you know, right now, in my opinion, they are the best team in the playoffs. And I use the word team because that's the way they play. They play together. They play efficient. They share the ball. They do all the right things that you would expect from a team who's really trying to win a championship. There's not one guy on the floor that they don't feel that they can't bring in and have a part of the system. When you're on the court with those guys, all five of the guys on the court are working together, and they're trying to achieve the same goal. And that's hard to beat sometimes when those guys are when you have a team that's really dialed into whatever it takes to win. You know, it's tough to beat that.
What do you attribute that to? Do you attribute it to the coach or the head man on the court, which is Tim Duncan?
Both.
That mindset.
It comes from all of them. You know, it trickles down from the coach, for one, and then, you know, the players have to buy into that. You know, there's a saying that goes along with, you know, you have to be willing to give up yourself. You have to be selfless in order to really want to win the championship. You have to be willing to give up part of yourself in order to sacrifice for the betterment of the team. And I think Popovich is definitely reconstructed his team, you know, his group of guys that they have. They slowly put together a nice group of guys that, you know, their main concern and their main goal is to win. They want to win the championship. So it starts with him, and it trickles down to the players. And you can tell by the way that they play that they are selfless, and they're all willing to do whatever, make any kind of whatever kind of sacrifices it takes in order for them to win the championship.
Black?
Yeah, I look at the Spurs. I see the Spurs, that old team in the West with all the old guys that come together. Coming in every morning, and they just know how to play. They know what to do. They know where guys are going to be on the court. Very, very unselfish. That's a championship caliber type of team there. Oklahoma, there's been a lot of knock on Russell Westbrook's play. How do you see Russell Westbrook's play so far during these playoffs?
I mean, he's improved, man. That kid is extremely talented. You know, he gave us fits in the second round. I think a lot of people give the kid a hard time because he's not a conventional point guard. You know, he's not a setup type of point guard. But for the way that they play, the way Oklahoma City system is set up with Coach Brooks, he's perfect. You know, he is perfect for that system. And the way that that young man plays, man, he's improved his game year by year. Every year he's gotten better. And I think he gets a lot of undue criticism, but I think if people would just take a look at his system and the way Oklahoma's system is built, Russell is perfect for that system, and he actually he's a big part of that team's success, you know, this past season.
Well, I have to be one of those that criticize him because the fact is I'm looking for a conventional point guard, come to realize that he's not a conventional point guard, but what you said is correct, that he fits into what they want to do, and he fits into it well. So I got to give him props because I was all over him last year and beginning of this year, but he definitely proved me wrong. So,
well, I think last year, I think he learned a lot last year in the playoffs. I really think that was a big learning point for him. I don't think he's made the same mistakes. Obviously, he's toned his game down a lot. You know, he's not – I think he's become more efficient, you know, if I can use that word. You know, last year he might have been a little erratic and – you know, he might have forced different things, but he's learned how to be a calm player, even though he's not a conventional point guard. He's still learned how to take control of that team, and he's done a much better job with it this year.
All right, let's go to the East with the Celtics, another old let's say experienced team who's won the championship. Against the Duke dynamic duo, because Chris Bosh sitting on the sidelines because of an injury. Give me your assessment of that series and what you think, what's going on between those two teams.
Well, you know, I think I haven't had a chance to watch too many of their games, you know, in their playoff series, but from what I know of both of those teams, you know, Miami, I think they're out to prove a point. You know, I think they still have that taste in their mouth from last season and the way their season ended against Dallas in the playoffs. And I think they had a close call against Indiana. You know, Indiana had kind of had them by the nose for a little bit, and they kind of let it slip away. But I think now that they're back in the driver's seat in their series, in this series against Boston, I think they are hungry. You know, obviously Boston is who they are. I mean, they've got a bunch of great veterans on that team, and it's not over by far. But I think Miami's just, for some reason, just you feel the energy, and it feels like right now they're trying to put their foot down. And D Wade is just playing like a madman right now.
Black.
Yeah, I'm glad he's playing like a madman because I definitely didn't like all the flopping he was doing. So I'm glad he got his head together. Are you hearing anything about a timetable for Boston's return? Will he even see him in the playoffs at all?
What, Black, can you repeat that again? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear what you said.
No, I was saying, did you hear anything about Boston's timetable to return to the playoffs, or will he probably most likely be out in the whole playoffs?
You know, Black, when he first had the injury, and when they came out with the report about how he had really tore his whole abdomen, you know, those type of deals, man, I have no clue. I haven't heard anything, but from when I was hearing when it first happened, they were saying he was going to be out for quite a while. And, you know, it'd be nice to see him get back at some point, but I haven't heard anything remotely close to him coming back, you know, in any of these upcoming games.
We're looking to see him be out. If Miami continues and wins the series, and the San Antonio Spurs also win that series, that's going to be a tough matchup for Miami to try to lock down the Spurs. What's your thoughts on that series?
Well, I think if they don't have Chris Bosh, it's going to be tough. But, you know, I think one of the things that Miami is trying to prove to people is, you know, everybody thinks that they can't win without him. At first, it was just like they didn't need him. Now people are saying, well, I don't think they can win without him. So I think the way that they're built, you know, their mindset is, you know, they're trying to prove people wrong on that front as well. Obviously, you know, having somebody like a boss there to kind of try to help neutralize Tim Duncan is going to be crucial, because Tim Duncan right now is just, he's playing at a high level. You know, it seems like Popovich has done a great job reserving him, but they're going to need Chris Bosh to help contain, you know, Tim Duncan if both of these teams make it to the finals.
So you think that Miami will be the eventual winner of those, between those two, facing what I'm hearing is that you think San Antonio is going to come out to the West.
I mean, I think, you know, if I'm looking at it from a momentum standpoint, and just right now, in my opinion, San Antonio is probably the best team in the playoffs. Just, you know, I mean, obviously they are from the games and how they've dismantled their opponents up to this point. You know, I don't think they haven't lost a game yet in the playoffs, have they?
No, they have not.
So from that standpoint, man, I think that they are just on a mission. And, you know, teams talk about getting on a roll at a certain time of year, and this is just a classic case of a team, man, just hitting peak at the end of the season, and there's no better time to do it. And they're just very disciplined, you know. So whether it be, I mean, Oklahoma City right now, to try to do some damage in this series, they're just going to have to be more disciplined than San Antonio, because San Antonio just really, they do a good job of picking teams apart. If you make mistakes, they're going to make you pay. And that's the way they play. So in order to beat them, you're just going to have to be extremely disciplined.
Okay. Black, you got anything else to fill?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask one more question. I'm hearing a lot from my guys. I got a sports group on Facebook that a lot of guys contribute to. And they're actually trying to convince me that James Harden should be starting for the Oklahoma. But they wouldn't have any firepower off the bench. How would you feel about that?
Hey, man, he's the best six man in the NBA for a reason.
Yeah.
And his role on that team is to come off the bench and to keep things rolling. I wouldn't change a thing with that. You know, he fits perfectly into that. It is almost like, you know, Coach Brooks has done a marvelous job, man, in doing that and making that team work the way it works. If he was to be interjected into the starting lineup, that would change the dynamic of their team completely. So the way they are now, they don't lose. They don't lose when when they make subs and they bring him into the game. In a lot of areas, they get better. So if they were to change that, they would lose a lot. And him coming off the bench allows him the ability to score, because most of the time either Westbrook or Durant is not on the floor, and it doesn't take away from those other guys. So he can come in for his first few minutes and just go crazy, which he usually does. And it's working out well for them.
All right, Phil, we got a caller coming that's sitting here. I want to take this call and see what he's got to say. Call from the 419. Welcome to the FSP Crew Show. State your name and your question or comment.
Hey, this is Scotty B. How you doing, boys?
How you doing? How you doing, Scotty?
Good. What's
you got a
going
question?
On?
You got a question or comment?
No, I was just listening to your gentleman that you have as a guest, very knowledgeable, and you know, I just wanted to make a comment that, you know, if you watch the San Antonio Spurs, obviously I'm a football guy, but I kind of liken the Spurs with the New England Patriots, a team that you really don't like, but they're very, very disciplined in everything they do. And I know you mentioned with the discipline, but the one thing, you know, one of the players made a comment. He said, "We like to turn down a lot of good shots for better shots,"
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
that's the key. I mean, you look at guys that are playing, Bonner and Leonard, and is it Neal? I think Neal is one of the other guys. I mean, those guys are average. I mean, they're giving them so many minutes, quality minutes, but they're great role players. But those guys are average players at best. And I look at guys like that. You look at what New England did last year in the Super Bowl. They had 18 undrafted free agents that played in last year's Super Bowl. And then you look at the Spurs players, and I compare them because – They just know their role, and they don't do anything extraordinary, but they do, you know, the little things, and that's why they're going to win the title.
I mean, Scotty B, you hit it right on the head. You know, that's a great analogy with the New England Patriots. That's I don't think there's any better likeness in what you're saying, and everything you just said is absolutely correct, man. They have you call them okay players, but they have outstanding role players by NBA standards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You got anything else for us, Scotty?
No, I just wanted to – and he kind of touched on it with Bosch. I mean, the last thing, if the Heat do face San Antonio, you know, you touched about Bosch. I mean, he's a guy that he's going to get you 18, 19 points, 7, 8 boards a game. I think they have absolutely zero chance to beat the Spurs. They might get swept in the finals. And that's hard to sweep somebody in the finals, especially with James and Wade. But without Bosch to neutralize Duncan, like you mentioned, I think they got about a 2% chance of winning the series. And I know that might sound crazy, but I'm not, man, that's what I feel in just watching the playoffs so far.
I'm going to have to get some of that money, Scott. I got my at least a game, man.
Hey, you know I'm all about that. If they meet in the finals, Black, I'll bet you on the finals, even up, and I'll take the Spurs, and you can have the Heat.
I can't go with the donuts, but just give me a game.
Oh, man.
I'll take the West and you take the East. There you go.
All right, Scotty B. Thanks for calling in.
All right, you guys have a good night.
Thanks a lot.
All right, Scott. I'll talk to you later, man.
All right, buddy.
All right, we do now have our other co-host. We're able to get him here finally. Jeff the Joker, how you doing, my man?
I'm good now. How's everybody doing?
It was a fight getting you on here because I couldn't see you when you were calling in. You got a question for Phil?
Congratulate Phil for his position with the Lakers, and welcome back to the show. And I'd like to know your opinion. How do you think the lockout affected the NBA season and playoffs?
No, man, that's a good question. I think it had obviously it had some effects. I mean, 66 games versus 82 is a big difference because that extra amount of time allows certain teams to try to fight for playoff positions, and you never know what can happen in those extra games going through the regular season. But I also think too the lockout just affected the season, this whole past season, in so many different ways. Guys weren't able to rest as much. The schedule was just super hectic, man. And I think, you've seen so many more injuries this past season because of the shortened season and guys not being in shape. So it's had a big effect. But I mean, obviously, the good teams were able to fight through all of those things, and the last four teams standing are, I'm not surprised that those four teams are still playing.
It affected a lot of ways. You can't just say one. So that's a good call.
All right.
Got a question for you, Phil. I don't know if you're able to say anything about it or whatever, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. What kind of turnover you see your team going through? There's been a lot of talk because of what took place near the end of the playoffs and how it ended. That there may be a lot of changes within the Lakers?
Well, I can answer that in two ways. I think one thing I've learned about being in L.A. and being inside the organization, a lot of the stuff that you guys hear out in the media, I'll tell you this, most of it is not even true.
Okay.
It doesn't come from us. A lot of it is just they call it drama here. This is the land of Hollywood, and so there is a lot of drama that comes with this team, and I learned that firsthand this past season.
Oh, yeah.
I think that Mitch Kupchak obviously does it. He does a good job here. He's been here forever, and he's very knowledgeable about the game. So, you do hear that certain things are going to take place. But to be honest, the most honest answer I can give you is when I come in this office every day, I just know the players that are here. And my job
right.
and responsibility are to deal with those guys on a daily basis, and that's what I do. So if we do make some changes and there are things that are done a little different, this boat, this ship, this organization has to keep on moving, and my job is to work with the guys that are in the purple and gold uniform. So, that's how I approach it every day. I really don't pay attention to too much stuff that goes on in the media, because like I said, after I've learned being here the first month, I realized that a lot of stuff that goes on in the media, I look around and say, man, that didn't happen today. It didn't even happen here. So I quickly learn. You know what, man? It's funny. I can laugh at it now. Now that I'm on the inside, I just say, okay, well, that's just more drama to add on to the whole L.A. thing.
Okay. Black or Jeff, you got anything else for Phil?
I'm good, man. I want to let Phil get on with his day, get on with his night. I'm definitely glad you came through, Phil. Definitely appreciate you seeing you back on the show, man. And
man, it's a pleasure.
On that job once again, man. Good to hear.
I appreciate
you,
fellas.
I'm going to try to catch you next season when the Lakers play the Wizards, when they make that one trip in the town.
Yeah, man, do it.
That'd
be nice, man. As always, I appreciate you guys having me on, man. You guys do a great job with the show.
Thanks a lot there, Phil. You take care and enjoy your summer.
All right, fellas.
All right.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Right. All right. Bye. All right. That was Phil Handy, head of player development for the Los Angeles Lakers. A friend of the show when he had a business called 94 Foot a Game, which helped him propel him, I guess, or kept him busy until he got this job. So, which is a very nice job in the NBA. Anyway, welcome, Jeff. It was a fight getting you here, but I got you here. I don't know what I did. I made a couple of moves, and all of a sudden I started seeing people appear up on my board. So. And you one of them. Oh, not you one of them. Somebody else. So I said, call in to see if you can come up, and you did. So how you doing there, Jeff?
Good. All flooded ends well. I'm sure it wasn't you. You know, sometimes you get technical issues. So that's the way life goes, you know. We deal with it all the time at work and everything else. So, how you doing, Black? Jerry, has LeBron redeemed himself to you yet, or does he gotta get a ring? Is that the only way?
Well, no. I have to admit, Mr. James. Now, and I've said this before when I got on Russell Westbrook. When I talked about Russell Westbrook, I called him Russell Westbrook. When I was criticized, when I got convinced and slapped in my face, I called him Mr. Westbrook. This is the same thing I'm doing with Mr. James. Mr. James has played very well, and he even surprised me when in the waning seconds of last night's game, he took the shot. Which I understand he didn't make it, but at least he took the shot. So I got to give it to Mr. James. They eventually won the game quite naturally. That since that bad loss in Indiana, him and Mr. Wade have turned it up a notch and have decided that we're not going to have this anymore, and our main goal is to get to the finals, and whoever's in the way is going to get eliminated quickly. And that seems like what's happening here, starting with at Indiana and now progressing with the Celtics down 2-0. I don't know what you guys think about it, but since Jeff brought it up, I'm going to go to Jeff first. Talk to me, Jeff.
I'll tell you, you know, it sounds nuts, but the way Miami's playing without Bosh, you can't say they're a better team without one of their best players, but maybe they could trade Bosh for a more defensive-minded center and maybe something else that might, you know, work better with the other two stars on that team, because it doesn't make sense that they play better without Bosh. But, you know, he's a good player, obviously, but, you know, maybe a more defensive-minded guy might be the right guy to keep everybody happy in Miami. Who knows?
Black, talk to me about Mr. James and Mr. Wade.
The dynamic duo. Mine is the costumes. These guys are a legit combo, but I will be careful to say they don't need Bosh. I mean, you look how these series have gone in the playoffs, that they really haven't needed Bosh in this series. But I think if you take on San Antonio, even if Oklahoma manages to even make it a series and comes back and win. Those guys have Duncan, Ibaka, Kendrick Perkins. They're big there. So I think it's just the matchup that is making people forget about Bosch right now.
Okay. What was I going to say? Oh, speaking of Jeff, I couldn't wait. I couldn't wait to get you on the line because my next subject I want to talk about, we're going to stay in the NBA because you are the, and I'm not criticizing you, but you're the one of the three of us that are the conspiracy theorists.
He's 100% correct on this one. I think I know where you're going with it, and I fully support his theory. I wish he would have had the guy, the author that he brought on last time to talk to us about this, because this thing is definitely rigged. Definitely rigged.
Now, going into this, 1 through 14 was the Charlotte Bobcats had a 25% chance of getting the number one pick. I forget the percentage that New Orleans had. I think it was between 10 and 7%, somewhere in that range, all the way down to Houston, who had a minuscule chance of getting the pick. Now, it all went according to the percentages until it got to, I think, either the fourth or fifth pick, where it changed up. And then it came to the final three, which was the New Orleans Hornets, who was owned previously by the NBA and David Stern, the Charlotte Bobcats, and the Washington Wizards. New Orleans Hornets, quite naturally, is now going to be presently owned by Tom Benson, who's the owner of the New Orleans Saints. He's going to take over the New Orleans Hornets. And they have the Washington Wizards, who has a very wealthy owner, and I can't his name escapes me.
Ted Leonsis.
Excuse me.
Ted Leonsis.
Yes. And what happens? The three of them standing there, and I watched this. The three of them standing there. The Washington Wizards representative was on the left. If you watching the screen. The New Orleans Hornets coach, Monty Williams, was on the right, and in the middle was the Charlotte Bobcats. When they said who was the winner of the number one pick, I thought your representative from the Washington Wizards, you could see the facial expression, and then he caught himself. The disappointment was monumental, but like I said, then he caught himself, and then he congratulated Monty Williams. Jeff, like I said, you're the conspiracy guy here, not to knock you, but how in the world, if a team 25% chance of getting the number one pick, and it just so happens, just like, what is it, Patrick Ewing went to New York at one point.
That was the first lottery.
Yes, that Anthony Davis, quite naturally, everybody knows Anthony Davis is going to go to, who's a franchise-type player as long as he stays healthy, is going to be coached by Monty Williams and the New Orleans Saints and the new owner, Tom Benson. I'll go to you, Jeff. Talk to me. The floor is yours.
Yeah. Right off the bat, I don't think they had much of a choice. I don't know what the other options are. The NBA never should have owned the New Orleans franchise because in many businesses, you can't do things like that just because there might be an appearance of a conflict of interest. And even though the league doesn't own that team anymore, there's still that appearance, and that came up when they rejected the Chris Paul trade because, yeah, how could the league reject a trade that involves a team that they owned? And I got to admit, the first offer for Paul I thought sounded pretty good.
Same here.
But they got were able to get more for him, you know, which it could have been a rental, and they could have ended up getting nothing. But I guess they knew something. I mean, the reason they have the lottery is because there were accusations in the past that teams were tanking games. But, I mean, for a team as awful as Charlotte, they should have more than a 25% chance of getting that first pick. I mean, they didn't end up, the way it's set up, they didn't end up with something towards the end of the lottery. But I guess they don't want to guarantee them the first pick, but maybe they should have better than a 25% chance because they're one of the worst teams in NBA history. Winning percentage-wise, they are. But, you know, the talk is, you know, hey, the league really wants the team to stick around in New Orleans, and what would help more than the number one pick? And I'll tell you, I mean, Charlotte is awful, and people are trying to figure out, you know, the reasons why they're so awful. And one of the reasons a few years back, well, more than a few years, they had the number three pick in the draft, and they drafted Adam Morrison.
At
the time, even I think most people thought he was going to be an NBA player. It was still thought to be a reach, and that guy did nothing in the NBA. And his he was spotted recently. It wasn't on a milk carton. He's trying to make a comeback. He had a workout with the Nets. I'm curious, you know, why he was such a colossal flop in the NBA, and what's different now than a few years ago when he had the best seat in the house for the Laker games. And I'm curious if, you know, he could be a good bench player. I don't think he's going to be a starter. Usually a guy out of the league doesn't come back as a starter. But, I mean, you wonder, why did they reach for him, and why was he such a colossal bust? I mean, sometimes there's reason, sometimes not. You know, yeah, it's just one more thing. And if you want to talk about conspiracies, look at the questionable officiating continues in these playoffs. You think they call these games straight just because everybody's watching and everybody's accusing, but it's deja vu all over again.
Right. Black?
Well, first of all, touching on that last point, I saw a funny picture today. We all know the big three of Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, and LeBron James. I saw a picture today that had the big three as Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, and the referee. That was Miami's big three. And to speak on the rig job, let's go back in history. Let's go back in history and take a look at this. When LeBron bolted and left Cleveland, wow, Cleveland ends up with the number one pick that year. When the Wizards, the Gilbert Arenas, and the whole gun fiasco, when Arenas left, the Washington Wizards ended up with the number one draft pick. Then you look at the fiasco, the hometown boy, when the Chicago Bulls, when Derrick Rose came out, and Chicago all of a sudden had the number one pick. And like Jeff said earlier, take a look at it was fixed when New York got Ewing. I mean, I don't know if it's David Stern or Vince McMahon running the league. I have no clue.
Named that, and I didn't think about that, but you named all those instances where you can actually claim some type of conspiracy going on, and I honestly can't dispute it because
you blocked the Chris Paul trade and then New Orleans.
Exactly. You're exactly right about that, Black. And if I was David Stern, I don't know how he could look a camera or look in the camera or actually get in front of a camera and speak that it was just a coincidence that all this happened. I mean, I don't know. I can't believe that all these coincidences happen all at the same time, and there's no no way of, well, there is a way, and everybody knows there is a way of rigging this, and obviously it looked like it was rigged.
It's called, okay, now we're going to go in the back room, But we've shuffled out the bottom seven, so let's shuffle out the top seven.
Unbelievable.
That process needs to be public. That process needs to be public or needs to be changed. And I don't see how you can let Rondo drive to the basket and take two blows to the head and not call a foul.
Yep.
But I guess that really is part of the original Big Three.
You're exactly right. I didn't see it because they flashed away from it so quick when it happened in live action. But when they came back to it and replayed it, that was so obvious, it was ridiculous. And how could you not call when Dwayne Wade damn near took his head off when he went up for a layup and got no call? And the thing about it, it was, if I'm not mistaken, you guys, I think the game was tied, and that turned it around because I think they got a semi-fast break with and ended up with a Haslam jump shot. And from then on, they took off and won the game. Am I right about that, or am I mistaken about that?
You could be right about it, but how about this stat? Between Wade and LeBron, I think they only had four or five fouls in both of the games.
Yes.
What? Did these guys not fall? I don't know if I'm missing something.
That's twice that Paul Pierce has fouled out of the game. It'll be very interesting to see what happens and how much the tide turns when they go to Boston versus how was played out in the South Beach. Maybe with some heavy money on it. I mean, we do have some refs that were involved in some shady stuff. I'm not saying that any of these refs were, but we have had some refs in these playoffs that were involved prior to some shady stuff and could have been involved with some shady stuff in the playoffs this year. So you never know. I mean,
we
see questionable calls all the time. And some of these are ridiculously not called, and some of them, some fouls are ridiculously called for no reason, and you got to replay, and the announcers replay it, trying to find out where the foul was or why call that foul in that particular moment when you get something like Rondo getting hacked, getting decapitated almost, and nothing gets called. So,
well,
what can I tell you?
The thing is, with the officiating, and believe it or not, I used to know somebody, a friend of the family, who was more paranoid than me. He was king of the conspiracy theory buffs. He was my mentor. And he'd been saying the NBA was fixed since the early 80s, I think he started with that. And the reason there's so many people who say that, I mean, all the other sports have, you know, a questionable call once in a while, but the reason why the NBA stands out is because the questionable calls almost always go in a certain direction. You know what I mean?
Right.
They go in the direction to prolong a series, to help a popular team, a bigger market team. It's always going in, usually to help stars. It's usually going in those directions. And I absolutely hate the officiating in the NBA. I mean, I know they're not perfect. I don't expect it. But the inconsistency and the arrogance and, one of the things, one of the actual players who people are talking about during the playoffs is Tim Duncan. And all I could think is, that bozo who kicked him out of a game for laughing on the bench, I hope he's not working. I think it was Joey Crawford. I hope he's not working any playoff games for the rest of the year or any games that Duncan is playing in, because that guy should be banned. Because I can't think of too many superstars as humble and polite as Tim Duncan, and to kick him out of a game for laughing on the bench, he should have been that ref should have been fired or at least disciplined for that.
Jeff, I totally agree. He's one of the gentlemen of the NBA. No one, to my knowledge, can say a bad word about Tim Duncan because he's a very humble guy, very low key, and to do something like that. I watched that. I was watching that game, and I couldn't believe it myself. And what are you going to do? I mean, like you said, some of these refs are very arrogant, think they're bigger than the game, try to be bigger than the game, that's to the detriment of the game. Black, you got something to chime in on about?
Well, I don't want to talk about those guys, but I want to touch on the sad story. I feel for this guy right now. I was excited that they made the fight, and I found out this tragic news. I'm talking about Paul Williams being paralyzed in a motorcycle accident from the waist down. I want to send a shout-out to his family. You're in my prayers, man. That's some tragic news that came out of the boxing world during this week.
What weight class was he? I think I briefly heard about it. I didn't investigate the story. Maybe that's my bad, but
Paul Williams, he fought in the weight class with Sugar Shane Mosley and Canelo Alvarez and those guys.
Okay.
He had just signed. The ink freshly, ink wasn't even dried yet on the signing. Him fighting Canelo September 15th out in Las Vegas, and we heard the tragic news. I don't know if it was Saturday or Sunday morning, but he was on the freeway trying to avoid another car and ended up hitting the curb and got tossed from the bike, severed his spine. He has movement in the arms, but he's just totally done from the waist down. I know he had another surgery on Wednesday to stabilize the upper part of his body, but this is a tragic story from the boxing world.
Wow. Wow. That is tragic. All right, we got about 3 minutes left in the show. I'm going to go to Jeff first. Give him a chance to have some closing remarks, and then I'm going to go to Black talking about Chuck Brown before we close this show out. Let's talk to me, Jeff.
I'm glad Black brought that up about Paul Williams. I guess it happened earlier in the week, and I heard that too. He's paralyzed, but hopefully, he'll... he'll pull through, and maybe he'll surprise some people. Look at the guy Mike Utley, who used to play for the Lions, who got paralyzed in a game. Wasn't he close to walking? I mean, that guy really, fought back and was able to accomplish a lot more than people thought. But it's been an interesting show, and sorry I couldn't get through earlier. And looking forward to next week.
Before I give it to Black, tune in next week, 8 o'clock. We may have another special guest, 8 o'clock to 9. It'd be me, Black, and Jeff, FSP crew. We roll like that on Thursday nights. Tomorrow will be me and Mac Williams, no chaser. I think we're going to be talking about LeBron versus Kobe. I think we're going to be some sparks going to fly because I think Max still got a vendetta out for LeBron. So we'll see what happens there. Then we're going to go to the FSP, the home show, the mothership, the fathership, whatever you want to call the ship, on Saturday, which is the crew, which is Vic Gardner is the host. I'm the co-host. Black jumps in and various other people jump in. And then on Sunday, 10 a.m. in the morning, will be the master plan. JT for the fourth time in the week. 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock a.m., we'll talk about, wrap up the news for the week and whatever else decides to hit me that's going on. And then also Compassion Dakini with Kim Fung on 4 o'clock Tuesday. All these times are Eastern Standard Time. I'm going to slip this to Black. He's going to talk about Chuck Brown, and then we're going to close it out with a Chuck Brown song. Talk to me, Black.
Yeah, big day in D.C. today. One of the godfather of go-go, Chuck Brown. His funeral was today in D.C. Huge turnout. About 14,500 came out to the convention center to see that man off the day. beautiful ceremony. We're going to miss a great one, man. Genuine guy, God-fearing guy, always quick to help out anybody in the community. He's a pillar of D.C., working on having a Chuck Brown Day on his birthday, August 22nd. Want to send a shout-out to his family, to his daughters, his sons. There's a beautiful ceremony today, and we should close the show out with some classic vintage Chuck Brown for you.
This is Chuck Brown. This is probably one of his most popular songs. Not the one that you think, Black. I'm thinking of Chuck's. How about Bustin' Loose?
It's all good. Anything Chuck is all good.
Till next week. You guys have a good week, and I'll talk to you guys next week.
What you need, y'all.